Hello and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Lillian Nakagawa, a member of the club's Asia Pacific Affairs Forum and your chair for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org or on Facebook or on Twitter or our YouTube channel. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker for this evening. Consul General Nguyen Ba Hung was appointed by the President of Vietnam to the rank of ambassador and as Consul General of Vietnam in San Francisco in 2011. Prior to his appointment to San Francisco, Mr. Nguyen served as the head or the director general of the Americas Department of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Vietnam and as counselor for political and economic affairs at the Vietnamese Embassy in Washington, D.C. Mr. Nguyen joined the Foreign Service in 1987 and has been assigned to the Americas Department for his entire career. While leading the Americas Department, he also was appointed to head Vietnam's office responsible for searching for the American missing servicemen from the Vietnam War. Mr. Nguyen earned his Master of International Public Policy degree at the Johns Hopkins University in 1996. He was a fellow at Georgetown University, and he studied international public law at the Institute of Social Studies, the Netherlands, in 1990 to 1991. Mr. Nguyen speaks Vietnamese, English, and French. He is married with one son and one daughter. He lives next door to a Commonwealth Club member who suggested him for this program. So, Consul General Nguyen, please.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. First, let me thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak at your very well-known club. I'm also impressed with the amount of events the club held yearly for the members, and especially the list of the famous speakers. And of course, I am not unhappy that I am among the least known speaker. Anyway, it is really my honor to be here with you tonight. And ladies and gentlemen, today I would like to share with you some thoughts and information about the two major subjects. First, some reflections about Vietnam. Vietnam as a country, not a war, like a few American people still thinking about my country. And second, I would like to brief you on the ongoing Vietnam-U.S. relations and cooperations, particularly our cooperation in maintaining peace, stability, and security in Southeast Asia. And of course, I would spend a couple of minutes talking about the South China Sea issue and Vietnam-U.S.-China, how we relations of our three countries. I will take some question you may have related to the topics I am to talk about. Now, first, Vietnam. I talk a little bit about Vietnam, and I'm so glad to hear that some of you, first, your club often organize the tours of Vietnam for the members, and the latest one was the one in March. You visit throughout Vietnam, many best sightseeings or best places in Vietnam. So I think some of you here may have been to Vietnam and understood about Vietnam, especially the country and the people. I talk about Vietnam as a peaceful and friendly country, a growing economy, and a responsible member of the world community. That's the key words about Vietnam I would like to give you and this is not my own words or Vietnamese government own words. That's what I cited from, you know, many newspapers, magazines, and statements by, you know, foreign officers and tourists and businessmen. If you visit Vietnam today, you will see some relics of a long and devastating war, you know, that American directly involved from 1965 to 1975. However, what you will see most is a peaceful and beautiful landscape with some of the well-known places like Ha Long Bay, China Beach, you know, many others. And the Vietnamese people are hardworking and very friendly. Many American touring Vietnam, especially American veterans fighting the war, you know, were very, very surprised and moved by the warm welcome and friendship that they receive from the Vietnamese people. And Vietnam is on a course of economic growth as it moves toward a market-oriented economy from the old style of central planned economy. In the 1990s and 2000s, its annual GDP growth rate was over 7.5% on the average, and its GDP is believed to grow 5.8% this year, higher than last year. And foreign makers of apparel, footwear, furniture, and electronics are attracted by low labor cost and have set up numerous factories there. And FDI last year increased 36%. And you know, now Vietnam, we are pursuing a comprehensive integration into the world community. When we began to open up our country to the world in the early 1990s, and we, you know, joined regional groups, then international groups like you know, WTO, APEC, regional groups like ASEAN, you know, and some other, and we become more and more proactive and responsible player in the process. And now we are working with the United States and other members on TPP, Pacific Partnership. Sorry, what you should know about the process of Vietnam integration into the world is that it really has taken place really along with the process of normalization of relations between Vietnam and the United States. Starting in the mid of 1990s. The second subject, I would like to share with you some thoughts about the Vietnam-U.S. relationship. There are a couple of things I would like to mention. Number one is why we are partner and friend now. And number two is the process of normalization. An establishment of diplomatic ties between our two countries has been in conformity with Vietnam, you know, joining the world community, like I said. And number three, the today relation between Vietnam and the United States. And number four is the prospect for our friendship and cooperation. Now, why we become partner? You know, there are three major reasons that now we are partner, comprehensive partner. The most important reason is the interests we share in bilateral relations as well as in regional and global cooperation. Some of you may question that why a small country like Vietnam working along with the United States globally? What issues that we can work on? I would say that in terms of bilateral relation, we share many interests. And Vietnam, especially economically, Vietnam has become more and more important market for the U.S. export, with a population of almost 100 million. And we also consume a lot of commodities from different parts of the world. And President Obama, rated Vietnam among the five major markets in Asia that his export strategy should, include Vietnam in. So that shows that we have more and more economic exchanges between trade, investment, technological, also we have the education relations also, and cultural and military security cooperation also. So that's the bilateral areas. And regionally and globally, we work closely on maintaining peace, stability, security in Southeast Asia. Especially after Vietnam joined ASEAN, after a decade, Vietnam become more and more proactive and important player in ASEAN. And we work with ASEAN to strengthen ties with the United States and cooperation with the United States in maintaining peace. Many of you may know that in May, when China put the rig oils in our continental shelf and special economic zone, South China Sea become very hot spot of the world, and it attracts a lot of attention from the American public opinion, and we work together to pursue peaceful means to address the conflicts and the problem. And the United States supported Vietnam approaches to deal with by using peaceful means, no use of force, no threat of force, something like that, and based upon the international law of the sea, UNCLOS, 1982. So what Vietnam tried to do to handle the issue with China on the South China Sea is really supported not only by the United States but regionally and by many other countries in the world. So that's the interest we share to keep stability in the region. We don't want to let any conflicts with the claim between among the claimants, to spoil the peace and stability in Asia, especially the maritime lanes. So we also work on global issues like changing environment, like nuclear security. So nuclear security is high, interest of the U.S. presidents. President Bush, President Obama, and Vietnam was very responsive to the issue. So we work very closely on this issue. And the United States also helped Vietnam to develop peaceful nuclear capacity. And the second reason is the needs of both sides in getting over the Vietnam War syndrome. You know, before normalization, the United States government needs to solve the POW/MIA issue, and we have been cooperating very, very effectively, and now we are still working on the issue. We have a joint field activities every year, many joint field activities every year in Vietnam, and Americans send teams to Vietnam, and we work closely. I headed that office, and I personally participated in many, many activities. So we work, President Bill Clinton said that the United States had been working with many countries to solve such humanitarian issue, but Vietnam is the model. That's what President Bill Clinton said about Vietnamese cooperation on this issue, in this issue. And the third reason, Vietnam also badly needs to get over or to overcome the consequences left over by the war, like Agent Orange, like the mining, some other things. So the U.S. government has been helping us over the last few years on this humanitarian. So we work two-way street, on a two-way street basis, and we help each other. So the third reason is natural outcome of both country foreign policy. That's what we mentioned previously, that we really share so many interests in having a peaceful Asia-Pacific. So that's the major reasons. And point two about Vietnam-U.S. relations is process of normalization and establishment of diplomatic ties, you know, took place along with the process of our joining the world. For example, 1995, when we established diplomatic ties, then the United States strongly supported Vietnam to join ASEAN. Without U.S. support, Vietnam could have hardly joined ASEAN, or APEC later, a couple of years later. So the U.S. support is very, very important for the Vietnam integration into the world. And number three point is that if we talk about today relations between our two nations, I have two most important points to share with you. Number one is today we are comprehensive partnership. Last year, our president visited the United States at the invitation of President Obama, and they released a joint statement confirming that the two governments decided to establish such a relation partnership. Comprehensive partnership is the second level, the second highest level in terms of our external relations with foreign partners in our foreign policy. Just second to strategic partnership. And number two facts I would like to share is that our relationship now is advancing very dramatically. Now we have moved to a new phase when Mr. Dempsey, the Joint Chief of Staff, visited Vietnam a couple of weeks ago. The first Joint Chief Staff visit to Vietnam since 1971, when we were still, at war. And number second event is a Politburo, a Communist Politburo member, visited the United States in July, yeah, trying to establish the relations between the ruling parties of both countries. You know, many of you may think that, well, there's no way that Democratic or Republican parties recognize or want to establish relations with a Communist Party, but that is really happening. And he, that Politburo member, visited the United States at the invitation of the State Department, and a meeting with all the ruling, all the leaders of the ruling parties of the United States. So that is the important thing, that you can see that how, you know, Robert's relations and cooperation between Vietnam and the United States is today. So finally, about the prospect of relationship between our two countries, I would like to emphasize that we have every reason to believe that the friendship and cooperation between Vietnam and the United States will increase, and we will broaden and deepen our cooperation. There's no area today that our two countries have no cooperation at all, including, you know, security. We work with CIA, FBI, you know, on international cooperation to deal with, to counter terrorism, you know, narcotics, trafficking, and human, you know, trafficking, and many things that we work with. So for the first time in the history, in the joint statement, the United States confirmed that the U.S. government respect sovereignty, security, and political system of Vietnam. So of course, we also respect sovereignty, territory, and, you know, political system of the United States. So that is very really, you know, grown up relationship between our two countries. So I stop here, and I'm very, you know, willing to take any questions you may have concerning what I shared with you. Thank you very much.
I see we have a lot of questions here, so we'll start here.
Could you enlighten us about the structure of the Vietnamese economy? Like, we noticed China moved from a very centralized planning communist government into more of a free enterprise, right, and it's kind of a mixed of the two. Mm-hmm. Where does Vietnam stand in that?
Yes, thank you. Actually, this is the number one priority of our government, to transform our economy. We are still in the process of transforming our centrally planned economy to a freer market economy. So we are doing more or less like China doing, but we have differences in the way, you know, we do that. For example, one of the most important priority our government focusing on is now to turn the inefficient and ineffective state-owned, you know, enterprises into a more, you know, effective enterprises like privatization, you know. So this process is really taking place very, very robustly right now. And many of the state-owned enterprises of the Vietnamese government are now become either private or disappear from the stock market, you know, and or half state-owned, half, you know, private, something like that. And the number two is we focus on is the banking system. The banking system is a pillar of the economy for every country. I mean, so banking system, we have a really big problems with the banking system. As a result of central planning economy, central planned economy. So now we have more. So now we are being assisted by IMF, World Bank, IDB, to restructure and make our banking system more and more effective and adapting to the market oriented economy or free market economy. So, thank you.
Hi. Hi. So we're seeing a growth in the status of ASEAN in Southeast Asia. In Southeast Asia right now, so I just wanted to see what was the impact of intra-regional trade between ASEAN and Vietnam, especially with the growth of the ASEAN economic community.
You mean you want to know? Can you say that?
Oh, again? What's the impact of ASEAN on on trade between Vietnam and other countries in ASEAN?
Mm-hmm. Well, ASEAN, you know, is one of our priority. The priority in our foreign policy, and the economic integration, ASEAN economic integration, as you may see, is now very strong right now. And we have a very close cooperation among ASEAN countries to build, you know, each member economy. And between Vietnam, for example, between Vietnam and Singapore, we have an e-government program, you know, to help Vietnam, you know, on the in governing the government activities and instruction and economic activities. And now we have a AFTA, ASEAN Free Trade Area, that has actually, you know, come into life. You know, Vietnam as a less developed country had been given some kind of privileges. You know, they had a roadmap for Vietnam to step by step adapt the economy to the higher level of, you know, economic development, like that of Singapore, for example. So now, but now, we have to open up our economy next year. So maybe the latest time is 2018 is the time set for Vietnam to open up completely the economy for ASEAN as a member. So now as we are working toward a ASEAN community next year, 2015, ASEAN will be a community, but I don't think that it's like a EU community. But actually, we worked hard toward that. And the impact of the ASEAN countries, ASEAN economies in Vietnam is very, very important. Very important. We are major partners, but still less compared to Vietnam, U.S. trade and investment, of course. But ASEAN, like a Singapore, like a Malaysia, among the top 10 investors in Vietnam. So we work, you know, the interactions are quite dramatic and very helpful to Vietnam. Thank you.
Yeah. Good evening, Council. The question I wanted to ask is that Vietnam is in the same, shares the same category as Cuba and Pakistan and China in that they will not accept a deportee from the United States, a Vietnam citizen who has misbehaved to such a degree that he's been kicked out of the country. What is the rationale for that policy?
That's a very interesting question. yes, the very interesting point you raise, the kind of similar geographic position of Vietnam. Vietnam is neighbor of China, and Cuba is neighbor of the United States, and Pakistan and someone. So due to this geographic position, I think Vietnam has been suffering you know, throughout history. We have over 3,000 year history now. And we had 1,000 year dominated by Chinese. And we only gained independence after almost 1,000 year. and up and down history, up and down our independence, up and down and regain, and you know. So that's the fact. But we also have opportunities from that. And the debate in Vietnam recently, you know, around the South China Sea incident is that the Vietnamese people and leadership should realize the opportunities brought to Vietnam by these difficulties, because we have not only the challenges, but we also have opportunity. And we realize that opportunities. That means the international community support us to maintaining peace in South China Sea, stability in South China Sea, and many other things. So we also pay price for our position, and we also get benefit from our position. In the history, we mal-manage, and we suffer. So we rely on we took side with, for example, the Soviet Union, and we had a war with, you know, many with the United States and its allies, and our country got devastated. And now that's why our independent, our foreign policy is now independent, self-reliant, diversification and multiplication of relations with all countries, to be partner of all countries. So that's why only, so the rationale is that the most important reason is that in order to live in peace and stability and gear up our nation, so we must know how to manipulate with our geographic position. So before we couldn't realize that very clearly. Geography, ideology is something important in our foreign policy, in dealing with our with the international community. So, but now we only look at the national interests, like the United States has been doing. So we must know how to deal with China, to be good neighbors of China. Although we have conflicts on the old South China Sea, but we must do our best to keep peace, because we have huge economic interactions, you know, between our two countries. And I would describe the picture like this. The picture of Sino-Vietnamese relations is big, and South China Sea is just part of it, not the whole picture. So we must know how to, you know, on the one hand, handle the issue on the South China Sea with China peacefully through negotiations. And on the other hand, to build up our independence, reduce the dependence on China, especially economically. So that is for our peaceful existence and for our security. That is the most important reason. And number two is that why we expand our external relations, especially when we decided to build strategic relationship with 13 countries. We have strategic relationship with 13 countries right now, strategic partnership with 13 countries now. And we have comprehensive partnership with 11 countries now, including the United States. And Vietnam is the only member of ASEAN having or enjoying comprehensive and strategic partnership with the five members of, I mean, the P5 of the United Nations. So the comprehensive relationship with the United States and with the other four members, we had established the strategic partnership. So that is important reason. When we're expanding, we must, you know that those countries who are interested in working with Vietnam because of the Vietnam geographic location, that means to work together to make sure that the advancement of one country or the emergence of one power could not harm peace stability in the region. Thank you.
Hello, you've done a good job of addressing where Vietnam is vis-a-vis the rest of the world and the major promise in and progress in that area. I'd like to step back a little bit, and the thing that I'm curious about is when many years ago the U.S. got involved in the Vietnam War in that relationship, it did so, at least ostensibly, to protect the South Vietnamese from the North Vietnamese. And I'm wondering, since now you're talking about Vietnam as one country, and it sounds like it's quite unified, if it is or if it isn't, can you talk to us about after the war, what has happened between the relationship of North and South Vietnam?
Okay. Thank you for your question. Now, I would like to share with you my perspective on why, I mean, the major reason the United States jumped in the war. You know, when, you know, you may know that President Roosevelt, during the World War II, he disliked colonialism of French. And he even thought of granting Vietnam with a status like trusteeship, UN trusteeship. And of course, Vietnam wants an independent, wanted to be independent. So at first, the United States was not really interested in Vietnam. But what made it the decisive factor was that after the World War II, the Soviet Union and China. So you may know about the theory of domino, the domino theory. And the United States, with the strategy, the anti-communism strategy, they believe that if the Soviet Union and China, you know, expand to the south, what they call the red wave, then it would be harmful to the U.S. interest, not only regionally but globally. So they decided to change the attitudes, the word French, domination of Vietnam, and began to help Vietnam, assist the French, as much as $2.2 billion U.S. dollar for Dien Bien Phu. You heard about Dien Bien Phu. So they help, you know, to fortify Dien Bien Phu. Many generals, U.S. general came, advisors came to help French to build that fortress. And also, but when the war ended, between the first Indochina war ended, you know, they divided Vietnam to the 17th parallel. And according to Geneva agreement, to which the United States is one, maybe most important, together with the Soviet Union signatory. After when the agreement
came into effect, there would be a general election throughout Vietnam to elect a united government, a one Vietnam government. That's what Geneva. But also, the two countries still temporarily divided. But after that, so everything changed. And, you know, now no general election at all. Because people in the South, especially the leaders of the South, believe that if there had been a general election, Ho Chi Minh would have been elected. And Vietnam become a communist country. So, of course, some other country, including that state, were behind the scene to help the South Vietnamese government. And, you know, then the escalating war, you may say, in 1965, the U.S. government decided to send American troops into the war. And the war lasted 10 years. So that's the background I would like to you to know. You may have different perspective, but from strategic viewpoints, we would see that at first the U.S. Was not really interested in Indochina or something, especially strategically. But because of the anti-communist strategy, you know, red wave threat and domino theory. And after the war, when we liberated the country, at first there's a gap between the South and the North, especially economically. The South was better. Of course, it was assisted, and a lot of U.S. money were there to help the Southern Vietnamese government, while the Northern people still had a lot of difficulties. Because we spent a lot of money for the war to liberate the country, for the country's salvation, so we were very, very in difficult situation. So there's a gap. Not only economically, but ideologically. That's understandable, and that's the two major differences between North and South. But we share many things, culture. You know, more or less same, and language, and many things. So family values, something like that. But it did take Vietnam how long? Like 15 to 18 years to bridge the gap, especially economically. And ideologically, it also took Vietnam like more than 10 years to be more, you know, become a more reconciliating country. And you may see today, if you visit Vietnam, you can see no difference between, you know, Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City. You know, we have good things and bad things alike. And, you know, you could see almost nothing that you can say, this is something southern, and this is something for northern Vietnamese. We are one now, really. Thank you. Yes.
As other countries in Asia developed and modernized over the last 30 or so years, such as China and South Korea and Japan, for instance, there also emerged a surge in the number of students that came.
Students?
Students, yes. Students that came from those countries to study here in America. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering your opinion about, you know, since as you mentioned, Vietnam has about 100 million people. Do you expect sort of the same level of, you know, surge as we're seeing among the South Korean students, as we're seeing among the Chinese students? Because For example, which you probably know, the South Koreans is a population that's about half of Vietnam, but that currently accounts for about, it's the third largest sending country of students to America. So I just wonder your thoughts about that.
Thank you for your question. I do share with you about the search. Not only our Vietnam or Korea or China, but many other countries, especially from the less developed or developing world, have been sending a large number of students to the United States. Of course, Vietnam was, you know, there are now over 16,000 Vietnamese students learning, studying in the United States. And almost half of it here in California, including the best universities like Stanford and, you know. So I would say that the United States, as the advanced, what I we believe is a very good education system, is where we want to send students to. And not only students, we also send teachers and many educators to get trained here in the United States. And this, I think the number of students, Vietnamese students, increased every year, And that is the number that we know. I believe that many other students come without letting us know. We don't know where they are and how many of them, you know, so we don't know. But we have a very formal official figure that is over 16,000. So and the actually is number one. I must say number one market for Vietnamese education. And most of them study here, studying here, and pay by themselves, the family. Just few of them paid by the government. Thank you.
It's very funny because your answer now is part answer to the question that I was going to ask you. I do know where some of the Vietnamese students are because they rent places in my building as they're going to school. In fact, one of them has my parking spot that I sold my car and have given to one of the Vietnamese students. But I'm curious, the lower grades, what is the school system there for those, not just those that are of college education?
Could you say the last?
The lower grades, the primary school
grades. Yes. I would say that what we are most interested in sending people abroad for education is the college and university level. And in Vietnam, we have a good elementary schools and primary schools. And you may know that, or you may not know that many Vietnamese pupils, when they participated in international competition for math, physics, many subjects, they won, you know, top. They won top prizes, you know. So that means our element. The problem is that now we are experiencing a educational reform. Why our pupils are very sharp, very good learner, because they had to learn a lot. You know, a 6 year boy or girl have to carry about 8 kilogram backpack. So a lot of books and things there. That's our people would like to change. We cannot let our kids, you know, work so hard. And of course, many of them suffer. But on the other hand, because they learn very hard, so many of them become a very good learner. And when we participate in, if, for example, after grade 7 or 8, Many of the Vietnamese people went to the United States to prepare for their university. And they were always among the top students at school. And they all told us that the program, you know, was easy for them because they learned much more than that in Vietnam, or even they even have learned what they are being taught now in the United States and even will be taught shortly in the United States that they know. That's what they know already. So they become a very good, you know, students here. So that's a good thing, but the problem is our kids suffer from having to learn studying too much. Thank you.
Councilor Nguyen, you talked about the challenge of Vietnam and China and the United States on an issue in the South China Sea. There's another issue I'd be curious for your input on. The Mekong Delta has much problems with not having enough fresh water coming down the river because of salt to farmland and issues like that.
Yes.
And in California, we have the same issue of water, fresh water down to San Francisco Bay, and it's very contentious, but we're just negotiating with ourselves. In Vietnam, the Mekong is upstream of Cambodia, Laos, and
Myanmar,
all the way up to Myanmar. And China is building many dams along the river for energy supply. And I was wondering if you saw some way forward for negotiating an agreement that balanced the needs for energy and Vietnam's need for fresh water downstream. There's a Mekong River Commission. I didn't know if you felt that was the effective way out or what you thought would, how it would play in the future.
Yes, thank you for your very interesting question. And that is really the problem we are facing now, and more serious. Yes, I acknowledge what you said about the difficulties, lack of fresh water, you know, because many reasons. Number one is the rise of the sea in many, in some of major lands of the Mekong Delta River. It got, you know, flooded by the seawater, the salt water. And we cannot plan or raise, you know, what we call fish or shrimps right there. And number two reason is the dams built upstream, especially China. But not only China, Cambodia and Laos, you know, also plan to build some of the big dams there, posing a really serious threat to the lower parts of the region. So in order that is really danger. And it's not only economic, not only environment, not only water, but it's security, really a security. And now in order to deal with this situation, our approach is number one, is to try to bilaterally negotiate with countries involved, including China, Laos, and Cambodia, to, you know, reduce constructions of the dams or find a way to build the dam so that it least, you know, implicate our country and other lower countries. But more importantly, we work multilaterally, and we appreciated the United States, Japan, and some other country over the last 5 or 6 years has been assisting Vietnam and some other countries, you know, to deal with this situation by warning all, you know, party involved about the danger, including China. If China did that, and Vietnam suffer, and other lower countries suffer, then it also affect China. and the seminar workshop internationally, you know, to warn people about that common danger, not only, you know, any certain country. And number two, they work out a program to help Vietnam. For example, the United States, Madam Hillary Clinton, that's her initiative. And she pushed very hard for the initiative. And now we have set up bodies, mechanisms, you know, among ASEAN country, among the country involved, and between Vietnam and the United States. We have annual meetings on this issue. So we have gained more and more, you know, understanding and support from the region, especially, I must say, especially from the United States. You have a fund for that, to help Vietnam technically, and to help Vietnam to build some kind of facilities now in the Mekong Delta River, especially in Cần Thơ province, Cần Thơ city, to deal with the problem of sea rise. So that's the way we deal with. But it's very tough. I would acknowledge that it's so tough to negotiate with China, because they just want to build more and more, you know, hydraulic power plants right there. So Laos and also Laos and Vietnam are very close, but it's almost impossible for us to persuade them stop doing this. But year before last, when the many countries raised the concerns, including major countries like Japan, the United States, Australia, some EU countries, about that, and now temporarily, you know, paused the process, not stop completely, and I heard that they will revise the plan. So that that's one of the problems that Vietnam will face in the years to come. I think many years or decades to come. I don't know, you know, how we can you know, reduce the danger, this danger, or limit this danger to our country. Thank you.
I want to go back to the discussion of the schooling in Vietnam. I was in Hanoi about 5 years ago, and my understanding at that time was that the elementary schools were not free, that families had to pay for that, and that particularly in the rural areas, the families could not afford it, so many of the mothers had to spend their weeks in the city earning money to send their children to school. And I was just wondering if this is still the case, if it's improving, or what the situation is now.
Yeah, thank you. That's the real situation. It's still there, especially in the remote rural areas, when the kids, you know, can hardly go to school because number one, very few teachers, especially from the cities, you know, want to get there. Well-educated people want to get up there, you know, to teach, suffering from very tough living conditions. And number two, the transportation. School is far from homes. You know, they have to even, you know, walk through, you know, creeks, streams, especially during the rainy season. Very dangerous. You may heard some story about the a kind of bridge with a stripe from one tree on one bank to another tree on the other bank, and people, you know, hold it, and so that dangerous. Some people died of that, and that is number two difficulty. Number three is the budget. For the budget, the local governments, it's still very limited. And including the local people who got trained in the major centers of Vietnam, they don't want to get back to their homes to teach because they want a better life in the city. All these kind of things, you know, make the education in the mountainous area very, very tough. But Number two, second point I would like to share with you is this situation is improving, because the United Nations rated Vietnam among the top country that can have been completed the millennium goals that the United Nations set for many countries, developing countries and less developed countries. So in terms of taking care of the poor people in the remote areas, our government spent a lot more money, and some other foreign donors also helped Vietnam, the educational system of Vietnam, and we have money from them to invest much more on the upper mountainous area, build more bridges, build more schools, pay higher salary to teachers who are willing to get there to teach, and teachers working there for a few years may enjoy some good privileges when they get down to the Delta, like a good job somewhere, higher promotion, something like that. So with this, I think the issue is less and less difficult. Thank you.
Unfortunately, we have come to the end of our time. I would like to thank the Consul General for his stimulating and interesting remarks this evening. Please join me in thanking the Consul General.
Thank you, Ms. Lilian, and thank you all for being here tonight to listen to me about Vietnam, a remote country. But I would like to see more of you in Vietnam, an interesting country. Thank you very much.
And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.